if you really want to have impact, you've got to be prepared not to control everything that you're doing. And we've really taken that to heart, because if we want carbon lights to be expanded, we can't wait to see how long it will take us under our own resources to do that. We're already seeking partnerships, as I've spoken about, but we have indeed developed a franchisee program where we will help people set up their own biogas facilities. The three things that are necessary to make a bio-CNG fertilizer plant successful: the land, the waste source, and the capital. Then we can work with them to do everything else. We can help them design an appropriate plant of the right size for the waste that we're going to be able to do that. We can help them train the operators of that plant. We can help them with the sales and marketing of the two outputs, the gas and the fertilizer.
So yes, if you're keen on setting up a waste-to-energy plant, here's how Carbon Masters can help you with it. Stay tuned for the full conversation. Hello and welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast channel. As I record this episode, it's end of 2020. I'm sure the very phrase is quite refreshing to hear. But the clean tech stories and the stories from this transition to the zero carbon economy will continue for a long time. In fact, 2020 was a highlight year with a host of countries and multinational corporations committing to get to net zero by around the middle of century, that's around 2050, 2060. It is such a big moment for them to commit to this, and it feels really good that this podcast, Mission Shunya, in fact, was quite early in the space to cover all the stories from around the world in this transition towards the zero carbon economy. Episode 50 is coming up in a few weeks' time, so stay tuned, let me know your views from time to time, and of course, be generous in spreading this message to your community of colleagues, friends, and family. Please visit missionshunya.com to get the links to subscribe for the podcast, check the blog, or even share the episode or write a review, recommend a guest, and much more. Now on to this week's episode. This week, our guest is a co-founder of Carbon Masters. He started Carbon Masters in UK at a time when someone would be happy to retire from professional life. That clearly shows in his intent in helping people and businesses through his services. On this episode, we will discuss in detail about their products, bio-CNG fuel, and the organic fertilizer range that they come up with, and how they can help you set up a project anywhere in the world if you are interested in. So let's jump right into our feature segment. Hello, Kevin. Welcome to the Mission Shunya podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Girish.
So Kevin, let's begin with the why. So why did you start Carbon Masters, and how's the journey been?
Right. Well, it's for me, it started way back. It was... I guess the original start, I saw Al Gore's film, The Inconvenient Truth, in 2006. And whilst I was aware of the climate change issue, I hadn't really paid much attention. And the film really shocked me to my core. I had been, many years before, a chemistry undergraduate, and I knew and understood the chemistry of carbon. But when I saw Al Gore's film, I mean, the thing that struck me was, A, this was a very serious issue, and B, we were seen to be not doing very much to address it. So that was around 2006. And then the following year, the then Labour government in the UK asked the professor at the London School of Economics, Nicholas Stern, to carry out what was the first financial implication of climate change, certainly in a European context. And he produced a report at the end of 2007, which was called the Stern Report, which framed the issue in a way that it hadn't been framed before, which was basically saying, if we spend 2% of GDP now for the next 10 or 15 years, we can solve this issue. If we don't, then the damage is going to be significant and we'll have to spend even more money down the road. Well, businesses understood that because that's cost avoidance.
True.
And then what happened was the following year, the United Nations Committee on Climate Change, They have a massive committee made up of all the climate change scientists in the world that produced its fourth assessment report. They do it every 5 years. And the first three reports had highlighted the issue, but they didn't ascribe it to anything specifically. But the fourth assessment report came out in its first words saying it's unequivocal. Human beings are causing climate change by our ability to burn fossil fuels. So the combination of the Stern review and the fourth assessment report led Edinburgh University to open an inaugural course, which they advertised for in the January of 2008. They were going to run a one-year master's program in the subject of climate change. And I was reading about that in a flat I had at the time in London and said, I'm going to do something about that. I'm going to go and do that. So I chucked away my corporate life. I had been working with IBM at the time. And I went to Edinburgh for a year to study with some of the youngest, brightest, passionate people I've ever met in my life, 38 of us from all over the world, including, I was glad to say, a young, brilliant young environmental engineer called Som Narayan. And Som had come from Bangalore to study for the program. So we studied it together. And then I didn't much fancy, I was 57 years of age when we graduated, and I didn't much fancy going back to corporate life. I'd had enough of that, frankly, because I'd worked for multinationals like Procter & Gamble, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and then IBM. So him and I decided we would set a company up called Carbon Masters, which would try and address the climate change. And we did that reasonably successfully for the first 2 or 3 years in the UK and Europe, and we even had clients down in Latin America. And then Som, in 2012, decided to come back to Bangalore, and we set up Carbon Masters India in Bangalore, and naively at the time thought we would do in India what we had been successfully doing in Europe, which was to advise companies how they could measure their carbon footprint and then take steps to reduce their carbon footprint by either energy efficiency measures or investments in renewable energy. But the issue was, back in 2008, there were very few Indian companies or organizations that were remotely interested in measuring their carbon footprint, much less paying anybody to do it. So we scratched our heads a bit and thought, well, if Indian companies would not buy advice, would they buy a solution? Because the problem still needed solving. So
true.
We started to look at things like solar. We looked at wind. We looked at briquettes. And in the course of looking at a briquette factory in a place called Adapalpur, just outside Bangalore, the owner of that briquette factory had invested money that he'd got from both the bank and from the MNRE to build the first biogas plant in southern India with a purification unit tacked onto it. But when we came across it, it was defunct. The farmer hadn't quite worked out how to take the chicken dung, because he was a chicken farmer. He created the biogas, but he hadn't quite worked out how to purify it, much less how to put it in cylinders or to sell the product. So he was flaring the methane to heat the chicks in the coops before he sent them off to market. So Som and I looked at that and thought, hang on a second. Because we knew purified biogas was still relatively new at the time, but it would be carbon neutral, it would be biogenic. If you burn it, yes, it's methane, but it's releasing CO2, which is coming from an organic source. So you're not adding to carbon stocks, whereas natural gas, petrol, diesel, or LPG are all fossil fuels. They're hydrocarbons that were formed millions of years ago. And so when you burn them and the CO2 goes into the atmosphere and impacts climate change. So we thought, hang on a minute, this could be a solution, a carbon neutral fuel. And we thought, well, where would we sell it? And we initially thought, largely because some work that I had done as a consultant in the UK with the European Commission had led me to understand that India had a huge carbon problem due to the success, well, wonderful success story of the Indian telecom sector, where there were around 500,000 telecom towers across India that back in 2008 were only running on about 12 to 18 hours worth of grid electricity. And when the grid went down, they went to batteries. And when the batteries went down, they moved to diesel generators. So the joke was that the telecom sector was burning more diesel than the Indian Army. But of course, then they're emitting a lot of carbon. So we thought, could carbon neutral cylinders be a good replacement for diesel? So that's what we started to work on. And some worked out how to run a biogas plant, how to take both chicken dung and food waste, convert it into biogas, and then purify that gas using the purification equipment, and then how to compress it in correct cylinders. And we designed some unique cylinders in a two-cylinder format and a four-cylinder format, which we thought would work very well as a backup source for diesel gen or biogas generators to run the tower. And we were, that took us from about the back end of 2012, early 2013. We were ready to think about some market testing in 2014, but the price of diesel at that time was still subsidized by the government. So we thought the economics of that might be quite challenging, and then we'd come back and do that at a later stage. But meanwhile, we would try it out in a few restaurants, which we did. And then we got the big aha. Firstly, because restaurants, of course, in India and in Bangalore are all using LPG. LPG, when you cook with it, as you start to use the gas, the pressure drops. Chefs just put up with that. Our gas is packed at much, much higher pressure, about 150 bar pressure. And then we've developed unique pressure reducing systems, which reduce the gas pressure as it goes into the kitchen and then into the burner. But because it's starting at such a high pressure and it's 100% gas, whereas a liquid petroleum gas has liquid at the bottom, it cooks at a constant pressure throughout the cooking process. So from a technical point of view, the calorific value of biomethane, as it's technically called, is higher than LPG. So you get a better cooking performance. It doesn't reduce pressure as the chef is using it, which chefs love. And you're saving money versus LPG, somewhere between 10 and 15%. So from a restaurant's point of view, it was super. And from our point of view, it was great because we were displacing a fossil fuel with a carbon neutral gas. So we were saving both costs and carbon emissions.
That's nice, Kevin. Before I get into the particular line of products that you have, I just have to appreciate the fact that at age 57, you went on to do a master's and then entirely shift into a new domain and then get started with this as an entrepreneur. It's something really credible, and hats off to you for your perseverance all through this time. So that's a fantastic story in itself.
Oh, it's been, I mean, I think I got a new lease of life. I mean, I remember writing a farewell letter because I had a global job in IBM. So most of my work colleagues were all across the world. And I remember writing a note saying, I've decided before my brain gets too addled that I will go back to university for a year, learn about climate change. And if I could, you know, if I could contribute to solving that issue, then that would be a nice way of finishing up my career. I never expected that I'd be 10 or 11 years later and I'm still doing it. You know, it's been a remarkable journey.
I'm sure all your colleagues at IBM probably would be proud of you now and the work that you've done in this space. Now, Kevin, you did mention about the range of products that you started developing over the years. Now, at this point in time, I understand, I know that Carbon Lights is the brand that you offer bio-CNG for restaurants. And what are the other line of products that you have in your portfolio?
Well, the other main product is if a biogas plant actually can produce two products. Any organic material in the absence of oxygen in a vessel will degrade over a period of time and produce biogas. Raw biogas has about 55% methane, 22 to 26% carbon dioxide, and a small amount of hydrogen sulfide. And if you strip that out, you end up with a 92 to 94, sometimes 95% methane mix, which is just like natural gas. But the digestate slurry that you have to remove from the biodigester on a daily basis, that lots of research around the world will tell you that that is already a nutrient-rich fertilizer. But what we've done is developed quite a unique process where we combine that digestate slurry with other biomass. So we bring garden leaves, twigs, branches, garden waste into our plants, and then we spray the digestate slurry on it. And we leave that for its own process, which lasts about 30 days. And then we turn these heaps. So it is windrow composting. It's a practice quite well practiced in Europe and North America. And then we sieve the product. Before packing it, we add an additional biofertilizer, which has the ability to take the nitrogen that's in the soil and put it into the plant. So unusually for an organic fertilizer, we not only replenish the soil with nutrients, particularly carbon, which most Indian soils lack, but we're also able to improve the yield. So it's a very unusual product in the sense that you get a healthier soil and you can also improve crop yields. So we have the two main products, Carbonites Bio-CNG, as you say, for restaurants and hotels, and our fertilizer, which we sell to farmers to help them displace chemical fertilizers, because chemical fertilizers are overused in India, unfortunately, largely due to the government subsidy policy, where urea is sold at significantly below its production costs. So farmers use too much of it, frankly, and they're putting far too much nitrogenous fertilizers in the soil, which is causing soil degradation. And the climate would have always had an impact in India anyway. You're between the tropics. So Indian agriculture would have always been challenged from the climate, and it would always have had to put organic matter back in the soil. But since the 60s, Indian farmers, when they moved to what was ironically called the Green Revolution and changed their move to a more industrial farming practices, they're using far too much chemical fertilizers and pesticides, and they're not replenishing the soil with enough organic matter. So that's the role that Carbonites fertilizer plays. It replenishes soils. It can help farmers reduce their dependence on chemical fertilizers and saving their input costs. And of course, chemical fertilizers are themselves very, very carbon intensive in their manufacturing process. So in reducing the use of chemical fertilizers, we're also reducing carbon emissions. So from our point of view, biogas to bio-CNG and fertilizer is, we'd argue, and we are biased, of course, but we think it's one of the best solutions to reduce carbon emissions that's available in the world today.
That's fantastic. As you rightly said, two products that are catering to two different set of customers is actually a value add. Now, in terms of the timelines, I understand that getting the fertilizer route is probably, it takes a month or so from right from the time you get your raw materials to then for that to degrade and then processes it as a fertilizer. So what about the waste processing? What is the timelines?
It depends on the substrate one's using. So we focus very much around, whilst we started at our pilot plant looking at chicken dung, we also prime our digesters. To start a digester off, you need to either the slurry from another biogas plant or you fill it with cow dung, so that you can create the microbes, which then create the biogas. But when the plant is commissioned and it's been primed, we focus on food waste, the organic portion of municipal solid waste. Now, that needs a retention time of around 30 days.
Okay.
Now, once you've started to generate gas, then you need to feed the biodigesters with the requisite amount of waste on a daily basis, and you need to remove an equivalent amount of digestate slurry every day.
Okay.
Now that's really the process. So once you start to create gas, we're pulling it off, purifying it and bottling it on a daily basis, as well as removing the digestate slurry on a daily basis.
That's fantastic. I understand that the entire process of getting the raw material itself is a big challenge, especially considering that you operate out of India. How big of a challenge is that?
It is, and one of the big issues with biogas generally has been both getting the quality of waste. Municipal solid waste needs to be segregated at source. I mean, there are two factors if it isn't. One is that you end up trying to separate it in the plant, and very soon your plant will look like a landfill, and people don't like that. Secondly, you have to spend more labor costs to separate, and then what you end up with doesn't give you a very good yield. So we need to ensure that separation at source is instigated before it's viable to set up a biogas plant. Now, in that sense, we were fortunate in starting this whole business in Bangalore, who, to their credit, have tried to lead the way in implementing the municipal solid waste rule. So it's an ongoing task, but the levels of segregation are better than most other cities in India, and they're getting better. And the government is introducing fines for people that don't separate. And it's just this week, I believe, announced that it's going to start levying a fee for picking up the waste, and it will only pick up separated waste. So for us And we work with partners. We work with two major companies that are in Bangalore. That's Saha Zero Waste and Husudra Innovations Solutions, that because of the implementation of the municipal solid waste rules, they are picking up waste from IT parks, from bulk generators that is source segregated. And therefore, we act as a destination for that food waste.
That is great. In fact, on an earlier episode, I had Padmashri Balram join me on the podcast and mention about...
I remember it, yes.
And mention about setting up a plant. And she did mention that you were very kind to help with the technology, and the plant is probably doing well.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's expanding as well now, because we're putting some additional boxes there that, interestingly, have been paid by some corporates who are paying for the fact that it can take waste and it can convert it and it stops it going to landfill. So it's going to reduce carbon emissions from that. So, you know, every step of a carbon lights power plant saves carbon, because the food waste, if it went to a landfill, would release methane, which would address the climate. By creating a fuel which displaces fossil fuels, not only for cooking and backup power, but also as a transport solution. In fact, SOM also developed using our gas in a CNG vehicle. And Frank, we were the first people ever to run a CNG vehicle on a Bangalore road with biomethane. And that was interesting, because that led to a relationship with Mahindra, because we bought 3 Mahindra CNG trucks. And the dealer rang up Mahindra and said, "You do realize that there's this startup company is running our CNG trucks on biogas." And they sent a group of their research scientists to our plant. And that led to lots of conversations. And ultimately, we've partnered with Mahindra, who then have built a large-scale plant over at Tirupati that we're operating and sell and marketing the gas and the fertilizer as carbon lights. So that's a relationship that's developed right from that early pilot plant. And it started because we showed that you can, as well as using it for cooking, you can also put it in vehicles as a transport solution. In fact, the government of India 2 years ago announced a major initiative called SATAT, called Sustainable Alternatives Transport. And they want entrepreneurs and organizations to build 5,000 bio-CNG and organic fertilizer plants between now and 2025, on the basis that the 4 or 5 nationalized oil and marketing companies, that's people like IOCL, BP, HP, and GAIL, will agree to offtake all the gas from that plant at a fixed price of 46 rupees per kilogram for the next 5 years. So that's a very enlightened policy, which will benefit India significantly, because India is importing around 80% of its oil and 50% of its gas. So it has an energy security problem. It has a fiscal problem in its having to pay in rupees for a dollar-denominated product. And, of course, bringing diesel in and burning it causes lots of pollution issues with particulate matter, particularly in cities around the air quality. So moving away from importing oil, where you're a price taker, and being able to create your own fuels using both agricultural wastes as well as municipal solid wastes is a win-win for everybody.
Perfectly said. And it brings me to my next question on the cost front. You did mention about the bigger picture, where importing it in crude oil in dollars and then paying it in rupees. Apart from that, if you look at the cost structure of bio-CNG versus LPG, for example, in cooking, how does it look in terms of the cost economics? Does it favor bio-CNG?
Yes, it does. We are able to economically price our products just slightly below LPG, you know, 3 or 4%, but it delivers in use savings of anywhere from 10 to 15%. So there's a saving for the customer directly, as well as the fact that he gets an improved cooking performance. So the facts are that we've had, in any startup, we have problems. We've had production problems. Things go wrong. We've had to remove the product because we had availability problems. But what's been fascinating is the question most of our customers ask when that happens is, okay, when can I have it back? So we've never lost a customer because they've been dissatisfied with the product performance or the costs of it. So I'm very encouraged for the future that if more we can build more capacity, we'll get more and more customers on our gas because it provides a better cooking performance. It's cost effective. And at the end of the day, they're doing something for the planet as well in moving away from a fossil fuel onto a carbon neutral fuel.
That is right when you say that it is bringing a lot of positive things to the consumer. But how do you get the message across to them? How do you sensitivize them?
I think the first thing we learned is, one can have a passion to want to reduce carbon, but a restaurant owner could care less, you know.
Exactly.
What he wants is, he wants the product to perform well. He wants to be assured that you can deliver it regularly and that it's not going to cost him more than he would be paying for LPG. And so what we get them is to try the product. So if they want, once they've trialed it, once the chefs start to use it, they don't want to come off it. And if the commercials are right, which they will be, we'll price it slightly below LPG and they get savings in use. That it's a very stickable product from that point of view.
In terms of other logistical challenges associated with production, I kind of know for the fact that not many players are there in this space who can produce the quality that you do. So in terms of the other logistical challenges of reaching out to a wider market, how challenging is it, or how are you gearing up yourself to address a wider market?
Well, I think the first thing we have learned is that, first of all, our cylinders and cascades are big and heavy because we're legally required to put it into a CNG cylinder, which is big and heavy. It's not like an LPG cylinder. We're having to compress the gas at very high pressure because methane molecules repel. So our four-cylinder cascade, which is quite a large, we put it on wheels so we can wheel it safely outside the kitchen. But that contains only about 25 kgs of gas versus a 19 kg small cylinder. So the logistics cost of moving big, heavy cylinders mean it's not economic if you have to ship it more than around 30 kilometers. But in some way, that meets our whole model. We think the beauty with a biogas industry is it should be large scale, but it should be decentralized. I mean, we've got to move away from thinking energy needs to come out of big, big power plants. That's the 20th century. We've got to move to a more decentralized model where people create their own energy. I mean, our Kormangala project that Padmashree was talking about is a wonderful example where waste is collected within 5 kilometers of that plant. It is processed in that plant. Gas is created and it's piped and consumed in a restaurant which is 100 meters away from that plant. Now, if you think the LPG that restaurant would have been burning would have probably started life in the Middle East, then it shows you what a real energy transition we're doing with a product like Carbon Lights, because we're not putting that waste into a diesel truck and schlepping it out 100 kilometers to a landfill. We're processing waste where it's generated. We're turning it into energy and fertilizer, and we're selling both products locally. That's a far better solution. Now, in addition to all of that, we run a fleet of trucks on our own gas. So we pick up waste in our trucks running on our gas, and we ship our cylinders and our fertilizer in our trucks running on our gas. So we're not paying diesel costs out of pocket, and we're saving carbon and additional carbon emissions.
It's definitely interesting when you can set up such plants in a decentralized location. But I'm sure even that has its own challenges. But as the technology gets better, there are better ways of setting up the plants in urban neighborhoods. And just as you rightly mentioned, Padmashree's case is a classic case where the waste is collected from the neighborhood and then distributed in the nearby locality. So Kevin, now moving on to the road ahead for Carbon Masters and Carbon Lights. So where do you see yourself going forward in terms of scaling up the business?
Sure. We're currently operating out of 4 facilities. We have a fertilizer plant at Malur. We have our pilot plant at Adapalpur. We have our Kormangala execution, which we're expanding at the moment. And we have a 40-ton plant that we are operating on behalf of Mahindra out of Tirupati. So that's what we're doing currently. We've just last Sunday broke ground on a project we've started at Harihali, where we formed a joint venture with our waste management partner, Hasudra. We're calling that joint venture Sustainable Impacts because combining the capabilities of Hasudra, which have a unique model where they improve the livelihoods of rag pickers to go in and pick up separated organic waste. It's a beautiful model where he encourages entrepreneurs or entrepreneurship for the rag pickers to be able to use a truck that he buys for them, and then they pay him back. But they monetize the dry waste, and the wet waste they can now send to us as a destination. So we've combined with them to build a 30-ton plant out on a business park on Harahali. And that will take 30 tons of wet waste that currently Hasudra is having to either send for composting or to the landfill. We'll create carbon lights, gas and fertilizer and sell that to restaurants and hotels and farmers in the Bangalore area. And then we've got another, we potentially want to do 10 more projects like that over the next 5 years. And we can see three or four of them already. We've got another project likely to start in Whitefield. The project at Harahali is 30 tons, but we can extend that in a phase two in the next couple of years for another 30-ton plant out at Harahali. And we are looking at other opportunities in Mysore, in Mangalore, and in Hubli. So we think we'll be able to get 10 plants operated via that model, which will help Hasudra expand because he'll have destinations for his wet waste, and it'll help us expand because we'll be able to build capacity and be able to sell more carbon lights and more fertilizer. So that's on that level. And then we're just about to start an interesting project with the Tata Projects, which is the EPC arm, the infrastructure arm of Tata, where they've done a fantastic project up at Jaipur, where they've cleaned up 40 kilometers of a very polluted river. And they've put cycle paths, parks, gardens, and four sewage treatment plants to clean up the river. The challenge they have is they've got 70 tons of sewage sludge being produced every day, which is currently having to go off to the landfill. So we're doing a pilot project with them, which we hope to start in February, where we'll combine that sewage sludge with food waste in a small-scale pilot project to see if we can convert that into carbon lights gas and carbon lights fertilizer. And if we can do that, that gives us an opportunity to expand to build a larger-scale plant right next to one of the sewage treatment plants to be able to manage all that sewage sludge. So if all that were to happen, then the sky could be the limit, because there are at least 800 sewage treatment plants across India at the moment which will have that problem where the sewage sludge will be going to landfill. Farmers can use it, but there's a risk if it's not put through an anaerobic digester, in that there could be pathogens in that fertilizer that you're putting back into the food chain. So this could be a large-scale solution for all the current sewage treatment plants in India, where we can create biogas from that sewage sludge, because it's organic material if you mix cogenerate it with food waste. So we'd be solving two waste streams problems and then creating clean energy and a fertilizer that could displace chemical fertilizers. So a real win-win for everybody.
Sounds really exciting, especially the Tata project. And as you rightly said, if you're going to get that project on ground, then I'm sure, as you said, sky is the limit. Kevin, on a final note, you are obviously open to collaborations. As we have spoken earlier, you have definitely helped others set up plans and projects in this space. So how can people who are interested to set up projects in their own decentralized neighborhoods get in touch with you? And what do you expect from them, and how can you be of support to them?
Well, that's a very good question. So, I mean, we were asked to come to South Africa to do a feasibility study about whether carbon lights technology could work in the cities of Johannesburg and Tshwane. And what we discovered there was those cities are suffering exactly the same problems that Indian cities are facing, with higher prices even, because they're not subsidizing LPG for domestic use like the Indian government does, and they're not subsidizing fertilizer. So the prices they're paying are very high. But as part of that, we met some people that said some very interesting ideas about, if you really want to have impact, you've got to be prepared not to control everything that you're doing. And we've really taken that to heart, because if we want carbon lights to be expanded, we can't wait to see how long it will take us under our own resources to do that. We're already seeking partnerships, as I've spoken about, but we have indeed developed a franchisee program where we will help people set up their own biogas facilities. We will help them with branding around carbon lights, gas and fertilizer. The three key components that someone who'd want to set up their own project, and we're in discussion with lots of people on this right as we speak, but the three things that are necessary to make a bio-CNG fertilizer plant successful is clearly identifying the land and the location of that land. We can help with that in terms of feasibility. So if the land is available and there's a source of waste, now the waste does not necessarily just have to be organic waste from the municipal solid waste stream. It can be things like pressed mud from the sugar industry. It can be rice straw. It can be chicken dung. It can be cow dung. They have variations in the yield of biogas that you can use, but they're all perfectly capable for creating gas and fertilizer. So one needs to identify a source of waste, and then one needs to have access to some level of capital to build a plant. Now, if the franchisee can put those three components together, the land, or at least some ideas about where the land might be, the waste source and the capital, then we can work with them to do everything else. We can help them design an appropriate plant of the right size for the waste that we're going to be able to do that. We can help them train the operators of that plant. We can help them with the sales and marketing of the two outputs, the gas and the fertilizer. So if they can, you know, with their own local knowledge and understanding, look at providing, getting access to land, waste and capital, then we can come in with our technology and help them use that technology to build a solid business case to be able to develop a good carbon lights franchise for both gas and fertilizer.
That's wonderful. That's a wonderful initiative. I'm sure, as you rightly said, having a total impact doesn't mean that you need to control the entire value chain or the entire process. You just empower other people to do it. And that rightly brings me to the end, or right where we started, Al Gore's film. I mean, a lot of us have been inspired by watching that movie and wanting to take action. And this has definitely been a positive action from your part. Kevin, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about this, and especially having interacted with you a few times earlier. And yeah, it's a great story that you still managed to find your second passion, if I were to call that, after retiring from your first job to pursue something really unique and having a positive impact on that. So good luck with your future endeavors, and thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you are keen on the project, you can know more about Carbon Masters and their Carbon Lines range of products on their website. The links to connect with Kevin will be in the show notes section as usual, and also in the website missionchunia.com. And finally, take some time to write a review on Apple Podcast or any platform that you use. It definitely helps in spreading the message to a wider audience. With that, signing off, this is Girish Shivakumar, and as always, thank you for listening.